now going to talk to you about the compartmentation of these four universes of spirit, mind, body, living forms, and the physical universe, with a specialization here on this thing we call the mind. First, let us see a primary effort that has been made across the ages to identify man with thought, to identify the spirit with thought, to identify everything connected with a soul to thought. You go around and ask somebody, what are you? He says, I am A. And we get beingness. First premise here, beingness, thought. However, thought is not necessarily a spirit. A thought is not a spirit. A thought is not a soul or a thetan or anything else that you want to call this source of life. A thought is part, actually, of the mind. And it is the first compartment of the mind. Thought. Now, we notice that all of these universes have something in common, one with another, except the first. And that's something we call matter, energy, space, and time, M-E-S-T. But when we say matter, energy, space, and time, we're usually thinking about the physical universe, aren't we? Well, as a matter of fact, the mind is totally composed of matter, energy, space, and time. Now, that's quite remarkable. And it leads one to believe that all the mind is some shabby copy of the physical universe, if one doesn't look very closely at the situation. The mind could be said to be a physical universe in generation. And the generation of a physical universe occurs, by the way, from the first universe, that of the Thetan. But this mental universe follows this same pattern of matter, energy, space, and time with one more thing. Thought. Now, thought actually belongs in the mind. And we can call off the parts of the mind here very rapidly. The parts of the mind do not consist of the neurons, morons, calves, brains, and all the rest of it. That has nothing to do with the mind. The mind, thoroughly and accurately confronted, which is something people have neglected to do, even though it is their nearest and dearest thing to confront, the mind is in actuality thought, matter, energy, space, time, and those combinations which make re-experience of these things possible. The mind also contains emotion, but this comes under the heading of energy. And in the mental anatomy here, we have energy compartmented into emotion and effort. Now, people make a further error. They believe that thought, then, has something to do with energy. And it's very, very wonderful to watch somebody thinking hard. They think hard. The one way not to think is to think hard. I remember when I was doing a lot of writing, there were writers around who were always priding themselves on having taken 7 years to write a book, you know. And publishers, the public would say, it must be a great book. It took so long to write. And I think I was instrumental in upsetting this stable datum. I went back and I looked at all the classic writers and found out how long it took them to write a book. And the great Dickens wrote at the rate of 5,000 words a day, day in and day out, and had lots of time to do something else. And so we go along the line, we find all of these great classic writers, probably with the exception of one I don't even consider classic, named Tolstoy, had a terrible time. But even Tolstoy, if you will notice, in spite of the fact that he took years to do anything, Nevertheless, turned out an awful flood, if you've ever looked at War and Peace and the rest of that sort of thing. That's a tremendous amount of work there. Well, that is essentially thought united with effort becoming a form of matter. Now, you see that thought has been married to something here. And people are all too happy to look at something that is a thing and that has dimension and mass and say that things without dimension and mass are that thing. So that people come along, they say thought, and they say that's a word. And if you want to have a good time sometime, why ask somebody to think a thought without expressing it in symbols. Well, that's pretty interesting. That's a pretty interesting thing to ask anybody to do. Most people, particularly if they've had the fortune or misfortune, whichever way you look at it, of going to a university, are incapable of doing this at first. The thought has been so mired down into textbooks, examinations, into grades, and has been so married and associated to all sorts of objects that they have never themselves seen that they substitute a mass thought for the mass they weren't permitted to examine while being educated. Let's look that over carefully. If we train an engineer in an optimum fashion, we, of course, train him with the tools of his trade in his hand. Well, that is not true of a great deal of university training. They train him in textbooks. When he's supposed to be learning about bridges, he is looking at a textbook. So he begins to associate thinkingness about a bridge with a thing called a textbook. Now, he just can't look at a bridge and do his thinking about the bridge. That isn't the way the education was done. He looks at a textbook and thinks about a bridge, and now we get the next part of the mind. He makes a picture of it. He isn't permitted to confront the thing directly, so he makes a picture of it and creates a picture. Now, it's this backwards look at things which make people believe that minds are simply copies of the physical universe, because the mind has been subordinated to the ability of the physical universe to remain solid. In other words, there's the physical universe, and it's big, and it's massive, and it's thick, and it has mass and energy and space, and it has time, and it all goes off very nicely, and there it is. You run into a curbstone and stub your toe, and you come back the next day and run into the curbstone and stub your toe, and you can come back the next day and run into a curbstone and stub your toe. In other words, it just goes on being solid. It has continuance and perpetuity. Now, people look at the physical universe and then make their minds a copy of all the laws of the physical universe. And this is an inverted look. This is reverse N2. Truth of the matter was, they mocked up things, they made things mentally, and when they stopped believing that they could make things directly, mentally, then they started to make copies of them. So the mind that you find in most people is basically devoted to making a copy of something, or mocking up those things which one is not permitted to confront directly. The purpose of the mind, then, to most people now, is simply to give to them what they cannot examine directly in the physical universe. Now, this is a very low order of purpose for the mind, I assure you. Very low order. Copy. Now, none of the laws of the physical universe need hold in the mind at all. And one of the old drills on the subject was to make a person do things with his mental pictures, his mock-ups. That never happened in the physical universe. In other words, mock up a body and make it float upwards. Well, he just isn't used to looking at bodies around and seeing them float upwards. Even the laws of the physical universe become thoroughly impressed upon the individual to such a degree that he cannot do anything but copy these laws. And he begins to believe there's nothing in his mind but matter, energy, space, and time, and neglects the thought item entirely. except when thought has to be examined, at which time he examines it as though it had mass, and you get a symbol. He gets strings of words. Now, there is one thought that everybody can think directly, and that's separateness. You can think this thought, separateness, without thinking the word separateness. And if you want to try that, why, just do so. Just look around and think separateness, you see, without thinking symbol separateness. That's all you have to do, and you'll see then that there is a possibility, you see, of actually thinking a thought without expressing it in a symbol. Now, this is one of the primary routes out for an individual. There are other thoughts equally easy to think, and you can graduate somebody upstairs to a point where he can think thoughts that have nothing to do with words or symbols. When somebody goes up the spout, he's doing all of his thinking, not in symbols, but he's doing all of his thinking in combinations of masses. Now, let's look at that. A thought can exist without matter, energy, space, time, or location. One of the first things he does with a thought is start to locate the thing. One of the next things he does to it is try to dress it up with some energy or some mass of one kind or another. Then he begins to regard the mass that dresses up the thought as the thing called a thought. And then after a while, he begins to regard a thought as an energy mass manifestation occurring in space. So he doesn't any longer even, you know, he can just think the word mother. You see, that's already in symbols. Higher than that, he can think actually mother without M-O-T-H-E-R or any other lingual bypass. He can think that thought. He thinks this word mother. Now he begins to think mother with emotional connotations, such as the Anglo-American races are desperately dedicated to doing. Mother must not be thought of without... Nothing wrong with mothers, except in Scientology we have been very fortunate in making some of them human, too. And kids like it. Must be something to it. The children around Scientology are doing so well. Anyway, we've got the next stage down the line. We think this word, mass, symbol, mother, has an emotional connotation, and we add to it effort. See, that's the heavier particle idea. And that's why it is so very easy to say, mother works so hard, you know. We hear an awful lot about mother working so hard from dawn till dark, and father working so hard, and so forth. We've already entered the effort band. That's still an energy manifestation. After a while, an individual does not think just the thought mother without further mass or symbol. He doesn't think the symbol, M-O-T-H-E-R. He doesn't think the emotion, effort category. He has a mass that is mother. In other words, he has a what we call it just a straight facsimile. He has a mock-up, except this thing has real mass after a while. Well, he doesn't want to sit around all the time looking at mother, he thinks. So the best thing to do with it is to chew that mass up. And we get an inverted mass. In other words, this thing now has gone through having been a mass and no longer being a mass. And we get a phenomenon that Scientologists know very well called a field. In other words, the individual is no longer thinking even in pictures. He's no longer thinking in masses. He is thinking in chewed up masses. And now when he sees some dark chewed up mass around him someplace, one of his first reactions is to get a thought out of it. You get this idea. And this has gone practically all the way down scale now, you see. And just below that you get a psychologist. Now, I'm not just taking idle raps at psychology. As a matter of fact, psychology comes in for some nasty cracks just as anything else would that was thought up a century ago. You get the idea. I mean, anything that gets to be old hat, like sitting around on the porch and playing a mandolin to your girl or playing a zither or something like that, why, later races all make fun of it. And this is true of psychology. It's almost a century old. But they had really gone out the bottom because they no longer could even see a field. You see? And they were looking to a brain to say, mother. Get the idea? They were clear on down. And they were totally out of the mental universe while still pretending to be dealing with the mind. See, they'd slipped all the way through the mental universe, and they were now in the universe of the body. So the mental universe had ceased to exist. It no longer existed at all. Therefore, it's very shocking sometimes when you come along and take somebody off the street and you say, look at a picture. Oh, he says, picture, yes. Well, yes, a picture. You say, well, do you ever see those very often? And he says, no, I guess I do. I have a distinct recollection that I use these things somehow or another. I guess I remember with them or something of the sort. He's right now into a field of recognition. You're doing a tremendous thing. You're showing him that there is something called the mind. As a matter of fact, he starts to pick up and become alert right that moment. Just as he was surrounded, let us say, with four pickets, and he couldn't get out of the trap because every time he turned around and tried to walk, he ran into something. You've shown him one piece of one of the pickets. And he starts to get an inkling now that there may be a road out and that the reason he hasn't been able to leave through that thing he thought was a hole is because there is something there barring his way that he has not confronted and is not looking at. You see? It's just as though this fellow kept running across the prison yard and bouncing. And finally the guard says to him, what are you doing? And he says, well, it's obviously wide open, clear into the countryside. And I don't know why, I just can't run right over into it, you know? So he runs up, gets halfway to the countryside, and bounces violently back. You come along and you say, I got news for you. There's a wall there. He says, no wonder my nose is bleeding. It's an unsuspected barrier, this whole universe of the mind. Totally unsuspected barrier to most people. The odd part of it is, you get somebody who was totally specialized in the universe of the body while pretending to work in the universe of the mind, and you get one of the most remarkable things you ever saw. You get a fellow who has turned his back on any possibility of seeing anything else but some neurons and synapses. And when he runs across the courtyard, boy, does he bounce. Wow. And you say to him, now look here, fella. Shut your eyes. Now, what are you looking at? And your uniform response to somebody who has been brutalized, actually misled into this total misconcept. You say, what are you looking at? And he says, nothing. You say, oh, come now. Will you please tell me what you see? Now, your insistence that he can see something makes him look. And he looks. Oh, he says, I don't see anything except these rockets that are going by here. There's just rockets. He said, you know, I never noticed that before, but here's all these rockets, and they just keep going by, shooting across in front of my face. You say, well, what do you suppose that is? You'll be very intrigued. If you just left him at that point, he'd go around for days wondering what these rockets are that have evidently been going on for so long that he hasn't even noticed. Now, as you graduate him up into an ability to see what he is really looking at, when you graduate him upstairs to show him what the rock wall is that he keeps running into, he goes from rockets, probably violent energy, motion, manifestations, just old pieces of chewed up facsimiles that he continues to make and scramble. He goes from that into probably a quiet field that is simply totally black or totally red or something of the sort. He's looking now at the bits and pieces of pictures. And if you coax him a little bit further, he goes from this relatively quiet field to one day he finds himself sitting there looking straight at a picture. Cool, you know, what's this? I have a feeling like I always look at this, but here this is, you know. And you had people do that, I'm sure. They all of a sudden realize they've been looking at something for years. They knew it was there all the time. And yet, they never saw it. Well, as we go a little bit further on the thing and have him look at the pictures and show him what the pictures are all about, we can bring him out then into confronting something perhaps like pure effort or emotion. And finally, we can graduate him up to being able to confront and look at something resembling pure thought. Now, we've shown him, when we have shown him these rough pieces, the principal parts of the mind, but there are two other parts of the mind, which I'll have to talk about later, which we mustn't omit from this particular rundown. And that's something called machinery and something else called circuits. And just as electronics men work out doodle-daddles to go whizzing through the condensers to light up the tubes and valves and make the sound come out someplace else, so does a Thetan mock up odd shuffling bits of talking machines and other oddities of one kind or another. But all these are classified under matter, energy, space, and time, plus thought. Now, the universe of the mind, then, is actually the most directly observable product of a Thetan. This is something he makes, and the first thing he will never admit to is that he makes it. This fellow's walking down the street, caved in, and he's got arthritis, lumbago, lumbosis. He has an intricacy of the cerebellum that has totally baffled the best medical authorities. And you say, now look, son, you're doing all that to yourself. Come off of it now. The only possible reaction he can give you is you're crazy. I'm doing this to me? Oh, no. Well, of course, you could counter the argument, but I assure you it won't get you any place. You could counter the argument by saying, well, then, who else is around? You won't make any friends this way. One of the first things that man subscribes to is that he's a victim. And when you start showing him lots of pictures, he tells you he's the victim of the pictures. And he never confesses to being the author of them. You say, what pictures have you been up to lately? Well, therefore, your initial approach to this sort of thing, to be quite honest with you, when you're telling people about it, is to leave out this ingredient of responsibility for causation of the pictures. That's about the first thing that you should leave out. The fellow comes in, on crutches, you know. He comes in, he says to you, he says, oh, and I was standing there minding my own business and so on, and good thoughts about everybody and so forth, and this guy comes around the corner and he hits me and smashes me up, and there I was in the hospital for years, and he's saying, I'm a victim, I'm a victim. Doesn't do you any good to say, well, you ruddy fool, what were you doing standing on that corner? Doesn't work well. He doesn't buy it, understandably. Another thing that he doesn't buy in connection with any of this is simply the matter of answering up when he tells you he's economically unsound. You know, he says, and I'm awfully broke, and I don't make any money, and we don't make any money, and there is no money, and we're all starving, and it's very poor, and so forth. And I coaxed a PC one time into asking his father, who was pulling this line consistently and continually, and what are you doing making so little money? Almost blew the household apart. I used it myself once to considerable advantage. Nobody talked to me for a week. But you can ask this burning question. Who is making the money? He is. Well, now, what sets a limit on how much money he makes? You know? Well, who's being healthy and who's being sick? Well, who sets a limit on how healthy or how sick you can be? Now, I'll show you how far this goes. This individual, let us say, his name is Jones, and he always has problems. He has numerous and innumerable problems. Every time you see him, he has a new problem. If his girl hasn't left him, she's returned to him. Always got problems. You can take this fellow with Scientology auditing, and you can straighten out his problems, which is quite interesting, and you can fix him up so he doesn't have to have all these problems, and you know that he stops having all these silly problems. Well, I want to show you something. There's nobody sitting in an auditing chair except the pre-clear. I know, I've peeked. And if we can address him in any way and do anything with him at all, it must have been that any result we achieve came through addressing him. Is this right? Well, there are many, many tests of this kind, and you could go ahead and prove it to everybody that they're all the author of their own ills. But then we run into this sort of thing. We run into the willingness to be the victim of somebody else's ills, but then who chose that? You see, he did choose to be the victim of somebody else's ills. But there's necromancy involved here. The second you get into the social interrelationship people, because you can clear up problems in Mr. A, who is in association with Miss B, and all of a sudden, Miss B doesn't have as many problems. Now what are we into here? We're into something called the dynamics, of course, and their interrelationship and the various agreements which a person has made along these lines. So it's all right to say the individual causes all of his own ills. He can prove to you directly and immediately that other people can do things which influence him. Your rebuttal to this, of course, is never, well, you have an agreement to be affected by this other person, and he has gotten you continuously to agree to be affected by him. So again, you're the author of your own ills. That doesn't go. They don't like that. They say, well, I am here, I have one mission, I have one goal, and that is to be a victim. And if I am sufficiently a victim, I can absorb, some pieces will tell you this, by the way, it's very interesting, I can absorb all of the evil in the physical universe, and then there won't be any left for anybody else. I'll have it all. All sorts of basic and weird computations come out of this sort of thing, but these are merely rationalities of the basic mechanics. Now, you must at once differentiate between basic mechanics and the tremendous pyramids of reason, rationalization, interlacings of thought, association, disassociation, identification, which goes on in the mind. The mind simply consists of a few items, and these items in combination can make an infinity of items. Now, 11 years ago, I couldn't have told you the exact number of parts of a mind, just like that, bang, and said, that's all. I will offer a prize to anybody else can find any more. Therefore, processes seemed inadequate because one didn't know what one was addressing. The drills and tools of the Scientologist might or might not be adequate because we might or might not be addressing with them all there was to address. Now, let's think of a stonemason. He's busy working away on a building, and he doesn't know whether the building has any rubber parts, and he doesn't know whether the building has any metal parts, and he doesn't know whether the building isn't being built of some other material that has nothing to do with stone and that no one knows about. Well, he'd be up the spout. He'd pick up his hammer and chisel and start to build a stone building, and then he'd say, I don't know. I'm no expert on rubber if rubber showed up, and I certainly don't know anything about metallurgy if everything is going to be metal. And how about this other material that nobody knows anything about, and so on. And you come up to this fellow and you say, all right, now, write us a textbook on building this building. Oh, you couldn't do it. He'd say, because it might have other types of things in it that I don't know anything about. Now, he could say, I could write you a little something that had to do with stone, but I don't even know if there's really any stone in the building. Now, that was the comparable level of research back about 1947. Didn't know whether this building was built out of stone or glue or even if there's a building there. The world at large has gone down in its realizations, its realities, and so forth, to a point where it is not even sure there's a mind there anymore. It's a deteriorated thing. And when you start to put the mind together for them and to show them what the mind consists of, about the first barrier you run into is, I don't know. The last time I went into a dark building and didn't know what was in it, I barked my shins very badly, turned a corner, and ran into a saber-toothed tiger. And that building looks awfully dark, and the less I go into that building, why, probably the happier I will be. So he compounds the fellow, and he never goes into the building. The building just gets bigger and bigger, and one day he's sitting there drinking his beer and happy as a clam, and he starts out the front door and realizes his front door won't open because the building has now grown up so that the building now includes his whole house. He won't confront it. He won't have anything to do with it. All he does is back up from this building, don't you see? He's just liable to have saber-toothed tigers and elephants and wild whirling dervishes in it and things that we couldn't even describe. And we get people like, what was his name? I forget these fellows' names. There were so many of them drooling along one way or the other. This chap that said there was the transcendentalism, that was the thing, yes. And there were things which transcended all human understanding that you were liable to run into. He was a nice fellow. I'm going out and put some skunk cabbage on his grave while I'm over here. And he said, any time you go into this building called mind or thought, you're not liable to just run into things you didn't expect. You're liable to run into things in life that transcend any ability you will ever have to understand them. So down, dog, be a slave. That's what that whole message adds up to. If you go around and confront a few things you're frightened of confronting, you find out they don't bite ordinarily. And if they do bite, who are you being so allergic to being bitten? As you lie there, chopped in half, you can always console yourself with the fact that you probably have had it happen because you had a victim complex you were not totally aware of. And this is something to console yourself with. But the point is, a primary discovery in Scientology is this. You mustn't overlook this as a primary discovery. It's apparently so simple that it isn't a discovery. It took years and years to get at this thing and square it around. And it is, if anything, the biggest single gain that we have. If there is anything which transcends human experience or understanding, it can't be experienced by humans. Do you see that? So this whole mock-up of transcendentalism is completely out.
It has no validity.
In other words, anything you run into in the mind, you can run into. And if you run into it, you can sense, measure, and experience it. Now that is a tremendous lesson. And it is on that, really, in Dianetics and Scientology, that we premise with very firm reason to do so all of our ability to go right on upstairs with this thing. And possibly the only thing that I added that nobody else had added in the field of human study is I considered one of two things. Either there wasn't anything I couldn't understand, which is awfully cheeky, or that I was expendable. You see? And that's quite reasonable. So, we just had, really, more years than you would care to add up on your abacus of people dreaming up the things that go boom in the night, which didn't exist so that you couldn't confront them. You see? And if all of these things that go boom in the night are in the human mind, and if they're all unclassifiable, and if actually the mind is totally overlooked, and the attention is put thoroughly on something called a brain, and then it's all filled full of horrible things that are liable to bite you at any moment, boy, they got it made. They got it made. They can bury everybody then and collect their undertaker's fees, which I think is what they must be after. They're not after production, because you don't make or producing people with this philosophy. You don't even make slaves, you make dead men. But that is the one great gain. I can tell you, after years and years and years of experimentation, of looking, of searching, with the assistance of all these good Scientologists, I can tell you that there's nothing there that you can't run into and experience. And we can give you now a catalog of everything that is in the mind. There isn't anything else in the mind beyond these things. And that's an awfully broad statement to make. But if anybody in any university had cared to research the mind, not the brain, had cared to research the mind, they would have eventually discovered this thing by process of elimination. Every phenomenon encountered was traced down to a basic phenomenon, a basic object, a basic thing. And we come out with it, we can rattle them off very rapidly. The mind consists of matter, energy, space, and time, and its subdivisions, which are peculiarly mental, some of them, like emotion. You don't find drinking fountains emoting. You know, they might look like they do, but you have to supply the emotion. Get the idea? And you don't find houses emoting. It had to be a livingness that put any emotingness in them, don't you see? And you don't go out here and find a rock and find it crying. Not unless you mocked it up to cry, and then it doesn't have any emotion in it either, unless you put it there. This thing, emotion, is peculiarly something of livingness. And as we look over this emotion thing, we find out that it's a specialized category, very specialized part of simply energy. And emotion has wavelength and it's so on. Now, you do find effort in the physical universe, and the mind simply ably mocks up and duplicates the effort of the physical universe, and you get effort. As a matter of fact, you get a strong man in a circus. One of the reasons why human beings start to put on a big show about effort is a very simple one. I might mention it in passing. Strong man of the circus never impresses an audience unless it's got effort in it. I remember seeing this huge brute of a man, you know, with these great corded muscles, swollen up in all directions, you know. And he came out on the stage, and some vast astronomic figures marked on each end of a huge barbell. And he gets under this thing, you know, and he picks it up, and the stage boards creak, you know. And he gradually fights this thing up over his head, you know, and he gets it up here, and then all of a sudden, with one hand, he shoots it up in the air, you know, boom. Gets some applause and puts it down again, you know. Afterwards, his assistant, that's a little girl about 4 feet 8, you know, she comes out and picks the thing up and takes it off the stage. But that big effort, you know, you know, boy, that's what gets the audiences. And after a while, a silly fool can't pick the thing up without going. You see people around all the time pulling this gag. They've been sitting there happily, cheerfully, writing away, writing some letters and nothing to it, you know, and so on. Somebody comes around and they say, what are you doing? Well, I'm writing some letters. And after that, you'll see them pressing the pen over the paper. You know, they're showing them there's a lot of hard work. They're showing them they're really working. I'm all suspicious of people who really work at something. I know they're just showing off. Well, the next thing you run into is this thing called thought, and it is the thing that makes a mind special. A mind could be said to be a universe with thought in it. And a physical universe, which has any livingness connected with it, and it has to have to be a physical universe, actually has a specialness in it called a thetan or thetans, spirits. It has beingnesses, live beingnesses, which go on and use it and live in it and so forth. But this thing called thought is the counterfeit of a livingness or a beingness in the mental universe. So let's just check these things off. Thought, emotion, effort. Pictures of various kinds. Broken up pictures making masses of energy. We call those things fields, occlusions, and so forth. Circuits, by which we mean, the Arabs used to call them demons. Circuits subdivide into valences and beingnesses of all kinds, but it's basically just a circuit. We call it a circuit because the fellow talks, and then this thing out there talks back to him, and he forgets that he talked in the first place, and he only listens to this other thing talk. That's a circuit. And machinery. Now, this last thing called machinery is very baffling to anybody but a Scientologist, and sometimes even a Scientologist will go along for years without running into a nice machine. And he'd say, well, I know what Ron's talking about. He's just talking about an allegorical thing. The fellow makes a circuit that makes something, and that's a machine. And that's what he means by a machine. I know what that is, you know. Then one day he's sitting there being audited, or he's auditing somebody, you know, and they're running something that has something to do with machines. All of a sudden, this thing shows up with belts and flywheels and stacks and cogwheels and gears and thrust rods and ejector mechanisms and input mechanisms and so forth. It's getting bigger and bigger and brighter and brighter. It's a picture machine or something, or it's a picture eater, or it's something of this sort. And it's been sitting over slightly to the left of the individual for years and years. And he kind of knows it's been there all the time. And it's what tells him what the future's all about, or it's what tells him what picture he shouldn't make next, or something of this sort. But it's a machine. The point is, it is a machine. Man's mock-up of machinery in the physical universe is, I think, simply a copy of his own mental machinery. That's quite interesting. It's the weirdest thing you ever saw in your life. That phenomenon, we can understand all the rest of it with the greatest ease. That one, perhaps you'll have to take on faith. Until you actually see one of these things in operation, you wouldn't believe them. But a thetan does mock up machinery. Now let's go over those things again. Let's see that we have matter, energy, space, and time as the primary parts of the mind, but these things have one more part that peculiarly makes a mind, and that is thought. Thought. Now, a thought is not a livingness. It is a product of livingness. Livingness is not a thought. Now, this mental universe, then, has these various categories, and these categories are approximated in the physical universe, but in the physical universe, we have an actual living thing, a Thetan. See? That's a source of matter, energy, space, and time, and the combinations thereof. And this being is live and doesn't dissipate and isn't anybody's thought. That's quite interesting. Lord Dunsany has some wonderful stories about this sort of thing. There's some giant that lives someplace or other, and when Skull the Drummer stops drumming, why, the giant will stop dreaming, and we're all products of the giant's dreams. And he'll keep on sleeping as long as Skull the Drummer keeps drumming, something like that. And when the drummer stops, why, the giant will wake up and we'll all disappear. Unnerving. The fact about it is that a being is a being, and he can change his identity in beingness, and he can forget, and he can remember. And he can do all these things, and he does inhabit this thing called a physical universe. Well, in this living being's own universe, called his mind, he substitutes thought for the livingness in the physical universe. So he puts out thoughts. Now, the principal things you'll run into, I'll repeat them again, in a mind. Thought, emotion, effort, three kinds of pictures, circuits, and machines. And all intercombinations thereof give us broken pictures, broken machines, and so forth. In other words, bits and pieces, a specialized kind of energy called fields. And I've just given you the list of functional material. These are the functional material that you run into the mind. And in handling the mind, it's these things which present themselves at once to view. Now, we aren't so much interested in space as it occurs in the mind. Space is there. Space is made in the mind. Everyone used to think that all these things were imaginary, and they cancel out the mind by saying these things are imaginary. They try to give people an unreality on their own minds by saying you're just imagining it. Well, I tell you, a fellow who is just imagining a horrible pain in his stomach is doing a pretty good job of reality for my money. And they try to say the mind isn't because you can imagine with it. It's fascinating. I mean, one of the first things you'll run into when you're talking to the bucolics, and you're talking to these people, you say, well, you know, I could do something for your father there. I see him gimping around ever since he had the accident. We could straighten him out all right. You want to be very learned, so you use some incomprehensible phrase like psychic trauma. If you utter that just right, makes a tremendous impression. Nobody understands any part of it. You say, psychic trauma. And, you know, so on. You go on and explain it, he'll understand it, and you're dead. He's got a mental picture, you could even say, of an accident, and it's in re-stimulation, it's hurting him, and so forth. Yeah. I knowed it was all in his mind. Just in his mind. It's an imagination. So it isn't important. Ooh. Boy, that's fascinating when you get down to it. We have this ruler of a country, and he has nightmares. And every night, witches and demons come in and cut him to pieces. He has these beautiful dreams that he loves so much. He only dares dream them when he has no responsibility, such as when he's asleep. But these witches and demons all cut him up and tell him they're going to come back the next night and cut him up unless he murders 15 or 20 more inhabitants. This may only be imagination, but I assure you of something. it's awfully hard on the 15 or 20 inhabitants. Isn't it? So if these imaginings sort of cancel everything out, that they are imaginings, cancels them all out, why, then we're in a wonderful situation. All we have to do is say about the Bible, well, it's purely imagination. Let's all go in an insane asylum. You see, it's just making nothing out of the mind or mentalness of one character or another. And the more people do it, the sicker they get. The mind is one of the first things you have to learn about the mind. It is. It isn't real. It isn't unreal. It isn't imaginary. It isn't postulated. It isn't unpostulated. It isn't dreamed up or designed. It is. Once you can get the Scientology principle of something is, without a bunch of embroidery, lace work around the edges, you have gripped a tremendous piece of knowledge that something just is. You know, is without significance, is without association, is without necessary relationship, but just is. Why, if you know your Scientology axioms, you should take that one that addresses isness and recognize that the altering of isness in any direction or the suppression of isness is the basic reason why people get into trouble mentally and why things get all distorted. So the first thing you have to learn about something like that is that a thing that is just is. Don't you see? It's almost impossible for the public at large to grasp. A fellow has a mind, and it is. You know, and they'll tell you it's this way, and it's that way, and they'll tell you it isn't some other way. A mind is. Now, you can come to grips with this thing called mind rather easily, because all you have to do is recognize source and total composition, and you will get an as-isness. Not by changing the thing around, but by recognizing it. And a total recognition of it is liable to give you... whoosh, and you have to mock it all up again at what labor. In other words, you get a disappearance. If everyone had a total grasp on the physical universe, not as something you work with, chipped apart, put back together again, powdered up, put in a mortar and pestered it for a while. But just that it was, you see. Here's the physical universe, and it is. Not we have to go back to the beginning when somebody named Throgmagog or somebody built it all. We don't have to trace it down to the first impulse, the first instant that any part of us created. If we just said, all right, it is, and got the completeness of the isness, as a single grasp, you'd have to make another playground. You would have done a much more thorough job than the loftiest ambitions of the greatest physicists in the world, which is the destruction of this universe. Do you see that? Well, now let's take one more look at this. And I've given you apparently several lists here of things that are in the mind, and if you look them all over again, however, you'll find out those just are the things that are in the mind. The mind has thought in it. That thought is not a symbol. It's not an energy. It doesn't necessarily exist in space and so forth. It's just thought. And you can think thoughts such as one's separateness from things, or think the thought of space. You don't have to look at this room and say space, you know, S-P-A-C-E. If you look all over this room, you won't find S-P-A-C-E in it, you see. It's not written up on anything. Well, according to the people who follow symbols only, it'd have to be plastered everywhere before you'd have any space. But you can just space, see? And you can get the thought of space as a recognition of space. In other words, there's a thing called space, and you don't have to have a thought to have that space, by the way. And there's a thought called space, and you don't have to have anything else, not even space, to think the thought space. You got the idea? These things are not associated, but they can be two different things, so therefore they're easily associated because they can both be on the same subject. That they're on the same subject, however, doesn't necessarily bring them together and mesh them up totally. Well, similarly, with everything else in the mind has these various isolated parts. So if the mind has all these parts, there isn't any reason why we should interconnect them and say we have something new. Now, a cook has a favorite trick. They take a bowl of water and a bunch of flour. Now we have two items. It's a bowl of water and some flour. Now we pour these items together and we stir them up. We put them in an oven. We have a cake. Ooh, what magic this is. We took two items and got a third item. Well, there isn't even anything that thorough in the mind. Two mental things, such as I've named, don't combine into something totally new and unrecognizable. You can go further in the physical universe with this disassociation than you can go in the mind, oddly enough, if you follow down these parts. Now, let's just tick these off again with the thought. We have the categories of energy, which consist of emotion and effort. We have pictures. There are basically three separate kinds and types of pictures. We have broken down pictures. We have circuits. And we have machinery. You don't run into anything else. If you know that, you can confront a mind. If you can confront a mind, you can as is or wipe out those portions of it which are undesirable, and you can enhance those portions of it which are desirable. Basically, the mind is an ability on the part of a thetan. A thetan makes the mind. It is an ability to make a mind. It's the loss of the ability to make it which victimizes him with a mismade mind. The mind does influence his actions. It can make him sick. It can completely upset his personality, his responses. It can throw him onto a junk heap instead of into livingness. And the subject of Scientology can take this particular area and straighten it out. The mind in Scientology has an anatomy, and the anatomy of the mind has a label, and we call Dianetics, through mind, that portion of Scientology which covers the things I've been talking about in this particular lecture. If you once find out in your own reality that only these things exist in the mind, and the demons and devils and things that go boomp in the night are not part of it, and if they were, you could look at them, then you would be able to do miracles with your fellow man, as I'm sure you can. Thank you.